You are listening to Around Comics, Season 2, Episode 7.
Japanese?
Yeah, man, and I got the pint, and I don't know what in the world the pint Sapporo cans are made out of. Vibranium, I think.
Nice.
Because you can't crush them. I mean, they're not like a regular can.
I know a lot of artists are, but are you a pen fetishist?
No.
Are you like a pen geek or a... No, well, you do all everything digital.
I do everything digital, so I don't. Yeah. And I'm so jealous of, because you know it's such a there's a romanticism to the this comic book art and this inking and this messy ink stained finger shit. And I can't ever take part. The only thing that I can do to even come close to that is when I do draw on my touch computer screen is, and I have the stylus, is I can wear a cool glove that has three of the fingers cut out, you know,
like an archery glove.
Yeah, you know, it looks just like an archery glove. Actually,
I remember. Gosh, and I can't. My memory's failing me, and this is, you know, part of my problem. But there was a comic strip. It was sort of a underground comic thing or something, and it was a little thing about an artist. He was at a convention or something, and like all the artists in the convention were monsters or zombies or some shit. And he was trying to figure out who was a real artist. And so he kept looking at their fingers, like on their drawing hand. He would look at the bump.
Look for the callus, man.
Yeah. And I remember reading that. I'm like, oh, that's weird. Really? Artists have that? And then I started looking at my finger. I'm like, oh shit, I do have a big bump on my middle finger of my right hand. It's like, wow, I never even noticed that before, but that was sort of the sign of like, you know, okay, this guy's a real, he's not a monster or a whatever it was. Yeah. I can't remember the story, but he's a real artist cuz he's got that bump on his finger. You could see it, and it's like, oh, that's one of those things that, you know, like an old school kind of
Well, you know, I kind of have one. I remember I used to have one. It seemed like when I was in high school, from using a pencil or something. But I don't know. You know, these stylists are. Well, I know what it is. That part of it is covered up by the glove.
Right.
So.
Well, plus they have the smooth. I think it is more from a pencil than anything else. It's like the wood, the wood pencil on your finger, just constantly. Rubbing you the wrong way.
There was some artist that tweeted online the other day. He was using a Q-tip on his ear, and he pulled the Q-tip out, and there was ink on the end of the Q-tip. So I'm like, you know, he's really getting into it.
Yeah,
he's got ink down.
Is that like Sienkiewicz? Just like he's all over the place. Just
he just wakes up from kind of like Hyde. Or Dr. Jekyll, you know,
right.
Half naked in the middle of the
and there's a finished painting on his easel. That's how I imagine some of those guys definitely work. You know, just like go into a sort of sleep, deep sleep, and
yeah,
like Frazetta used to. They, you know, he would, and I always like, what the hell is he doing in there? But like they would say he'd like lock himself in a room for 24 hours, and he'd come out, and there'd be a painting done, and. He would use like no reference, and he would just go in there and just paint, And like I said, like in 24 hours, he would have a finished painting, you know, and just the idea that one, he's not using any reference.
Well, I wonder if he would speed that up if he had reference.
Well, 24 hours for a painting is, I mean,
that's pretty fast.
That's pretty
anyway.
Damn fast. You know, it's like,
yeah,
for his paintings. Holy crap.
Yeah, you're right. But you know, 24 hours straight is like if I'm working on something and I go too long on it, and if I don't get up to go take a break, then the last part of it, I'm kind of phoning in, you know, or I'm just, all right, I got the clock's ticking, I got to get to bed, and I'm going through the last part a little too. So I mean, there, part of the artistic process is setting it down, stepping away, go, you know.
Yeah, it took me a long time to learn that, to try and, you know, because it was always, I would start something and I wanted to finish it, and most of the time I was really disappointed by it because it would be shitty because I didn't take the time. I would rush through things and it came out like crap. It really showed in the art. And it took me a long time to be able to sit down and go, okay, I don't need to finish this today, and I can put it to the side and come back to it tomorrow. It's fine to do that. But my stuff really,
it'll be better if you do.
Yeah, I really improved upon doing that. It started to get better because, you know, when you're, it's not a race, you know, but I think that was my, you know, graphic design upbringing, you know, being in the graphic design world, it's like you're on a deadline. And so you're just trying to get stuff done sometimes, you know, you're just trying to burn through it. And I'm sure freelancers, you know, guys out there run into the same thing where it's just like, well, you're on a deadline and you have to get things done. And but hopefully by that point you've learned, you know, what you need to do in order to make those deadlines and still keep the quality up.
Another thing that that I've learned, and somebody had, I can't remember who it was, one artist that we know had mentioned, you know, when you sit down to do a piece, you don't have to, and this is something I'm trying to desperately to teach myself, the art of the sketch, where you just do a little something and then walk away from it, as opposed to sitting there, okay, now I've done that, now I've got to go in and tighten the lines, now I've done that, now I've got to go in and, you know, add the gray tones, and then now I got to color it, and then and sometimes things just look good if they're just a sketch and there's all the crazy lines in it. And I found that if I do, if I'm able to just do a sketch real quick and then, you know, I'll look at it and then I'm okay. I'm pleased with it, I guess. But if I come back to it later on, I really like the way it looks.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that is, but
perspective. Yeah. I don't know. No, I can definitely see that. I mean, I think, well, we've both talked about that before. It's like, or I think it was us. I think it was you I was talking to. It's like, you know, I used to try and get everything as tight as possible, and I didn't think that it was a finished piece or it was any good until it was, like, as clean and as tight as possible. And now it's like, I'm fighting against that, trying to make things looser and looser, but it's not easy to do, like, you know, I think that's really hard to, at least for me, it's really hard to kind of do that, you know?
Yeah. Well, Kevin Mellon, you know, reading Hart and looking through his art, the real immediate look of it, that's one that, you know, you read through one of those comics and then you immediately want to go and try to, it just inspires you to draw yourself. And yeah, I remember when I was young, I think it was probably Walter Simonson. his first name's Walter, isn't it?
Yes. His wife is Louise.
He was one that used to really inspire me to want to draw.
Oh yeah. Simonson's,
yeah,
freaking amazing. Once again, are you rubbing up against your microphone or something? Are you breathing into it? What is that sound?
Oh, we're not supposed to be masturbating during the whole.
Well, I'm not gonna, you know, put any kind of restriction on you. Whatever makes you comfortable.
No, I don't know what it is.
I keep hearing like a whoosh, whoosh, you know, kind of Like, it sounds like your mic's rubbing on something or you're breathing.
You're going to make me turn the fan.
Are you nose breathing? Oh, it's a fan. It's your fan. Shit. Can you just turn it away from you, maybe?
It's a ceiling fan. Let me try to turn the ceiling, tilt the ceiling.
Okay, well, while you do that, I'm going to introduce the show. Hey, everybody. It's Around Comics. Welcome back to another episode. It's Braxton and I. Braxton's fixing his fan, and I'm complaining about his fan noise. But thanks for coming
up.
What?
He wants me to burn up in here.
No, well, you're in Hotlanta, right?
That's it.
Thanks for listening again. This is sort of just a free-form show. We don't really have a whole lot planned specifically. We're not reviewing anything. We're not, we're not having any guests on. This is just us kind of sitting back and chatting about whatever comes to mind. So. Hopefully you will enjoy our sort of,
dialogue.
Yeah, free form back and forth dialogue. Who knows what we will talk about other than fans and it's been hot, man, hot. I don't know how hot it's been for you, but it's been
in the hundreds. Whatever it is for you, it's like triplicate for me.
No, not always. It's been 100. It was 103 today. How hot, what was the temperature where you're at?
We don't even look down here.
You don't even have thermometers to go up.
No, if you look at it, it's like you're looking at the face of Cthulhu or something. It makes you go insane. You can't look at the
mouth of madness.
Yeah. I mean, you know, down here we've got you just walk down the street and there's lots of old people that have
died. Just died inspired. Right there.
lots of expirations going on. You know, it's bad.
It's bad news. Bad news. We had a storm last week that came through, knocked out all the power. Like 200,000 people in my general area were without power, and it was super hot. And my power came on in like 12 hours, so I was pretty happy. I didn't have to throw out too much food or anything, and I was able to sleep with the air on, and I was pretty happy. But I had people, neighbors and stuff, that didn't get power for 5 days. And it's been in the high 90s and low 100s.
Yeah.
For
I think Ohio is kind of having it bad. They have cooling stations or something for the elderly, yeah, which, you know, if my power goes off, I immediately go up to the roof and the whole family, we sit on the roof.
Sit on the roof?
Yeah. You know, it's just usually people do that for floods, but...
You're just waiting for help.
Anything that goes
like a
down,
helicopter or something.
Yeah, anything that goes down, we're on the roof.
You're not in Louisiana. Come on.
Anything.
Just go up to the roof and wait for help.
Somebody will see you.
Flag. So do you just like put a big help like in like rocks or like do you use like duct tape and just tape a giant help sign?
We get brush and. We set fire to the brush. We've gone through two houses already.
Nice. Very nice. Very nice. Before we get too far into this, I do want to take a break and let you know about our sponsors. So here you go. This episode is brought to you by Discount Comic Book Service and InStockTrades.com. Do you like comics? Do you like unicorn paintings? Do you like money? Would you like to save more money on your comics so you can buy unicorn paintings? Then you need to visit Discount Comic Book Service at dcbservice.com today. Discount Comic Book Service is the only comic shop online that offers savings up to 50% off cover price. Get the hottest books on the stands delivered to your front door. During the month of July, DCBS is offering the DC Zero issue bundle for only $87.23. Get all 55 of the new DC Zero issues at 50% off the cover price. Also at 50% off is the Nexus Omnibus Trade Paperback Volume 1. The first omnibus collection of this classic work by Steve Rude and Mike Baron is only $12.49. And don't forget the latest new series by master storytellers Alan Moore and Grant Morrison. Moore's Fashion Beast Number 1 and Morrison's Happy Number 1 are both half off as well. There are so many great deals in July, we can't tell you all about them. So if you like comics and you like saving money on comics, stop wasting time and get to dcbservice.com today. Unicorn paintings not included. D- Discount Comic Book Service. That's right. Go there, get some comics because I said so, and that should be.
You know, I gotta remember what my password is
for Discount Comic Book Service.
Yeah, I've gone through several passwords for Discount Comic Book Service.
Well, do you take long breaks in between ordering?
Yeah, and I don't write passwords down.
I used to. Well, this is sort of embarrassing, but I was a terrible student in high school. And like my senior year of high school, I was rarely ever there. I didn't go to class very often. But I would have, every once in a while, I would have a recurring dream that I would go to school and I would be late for like a really important test or something. And I'd be running around and I either A, couldn't remember where my locker was, or B, I couldn't remember the combination to my locker because I hadn't actually opened it in so long that I completely forgot. But I think that actually did happen to me at one point that I forgot what, and I still to this day, like I have a, like at my gym, I have a locker, you know, a little,
they all look alike too. I mean,
yeah, but I always have the fear of like, I'm going to forget my locker combination, which, you know, isn't really that big a deal. It's, you know, you get another. But when you're a kid, I get when, you know, in high school.
Well, I can't remember how often when I was in school we would change lockers, but I do remember having, you know, a heavy rotation of, oh, I've got 326 this year, or I've, you know, and maybe.
Well, I think it was just like every year, yeah, you would get a new locker.
It's funny, Hallie and I've got a post office box for the business, and Hallie and I went to the post office the other day to get the mail, and you know how the post office boxes are. It's just a row of all of these, you know, boxes that look just alike, and Hallie never saw the desk part of our post office. We just kind of go straight to the boxes. So I forgot what she asked, but you know, Hallie's my 3-year-old daughter, I should say, for the audience.
Hallie Jordan.
So, yes. And I told her that, there's another world on the inside of our box. And she's like, oh, really, really? So we went and got the mail and I opened it up. And, you know, it kind of does look like you're looking in a box and it opens up into this, there's people in there walking around and stuff. So
that's cool.
She was all, yeah, I wonder what it was like for the postal employees to see this face, this little voice coming from the cubby.
No, wait. When you look through the box on the other side is the office.
Well, it's like the workroom. I mean, it's a huge warehouse room. You know,
See, mine's like in the vault.
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm not thinking of the post office box. You know what it is? I'm thinking about bank. My bank. Yeah, that's I have a safety deposit box.
No, the post office is. I mean, on the other side.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, because I had a post office box at one time.
It would have been really cool if I could have worked it out with the postal employees some dwarves.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you had like a dwarf working there, that would be fucking awesome. You get them on a unicycle or something.
Hey, can like, you come over here on your unicycle and just ride by?
Can you put this funny hat on? Because all dwarves
sing a song.
Like all dwarves have unicycles, right? They're issued those at birth, I think.
Yeah, sing. Everyone
they
of them sing.
Juggle. They all juggle. This is terrible. I have a safety deposit box, and I don't know. My wife has some stuff in it, and I have a few things like, you know, I don't even know, crap in there. But you know, titles that, you know, card titles, that kind of stuff. But every time I go there, I always have a weird experience. Like I always have a feeling like the dude or the lady that's, you know, letting me in and bringing me to my box. And I rarely go. Like I go so few, you know, very few. And goes back to my fear of forgetting my locker. I forget where my safety deposit box is. I have the number written down. But I'll go to the bank and, you know, and like they'll open the vault and usher me in, and then they'll kind of wait for me to find my box, and I'll be like, I don't, but I get this weird feeling in my head, like if I don't know where my box is, they're going to think I'm some sort of fraud.
they're going to snap your neck if you don't answer the question.
It's like, it's this weird, like, paranoia I have about stuff like that. I don't know why, but it's
so
just,
you got safety deposit boxes stashed all over the city.
Oh yeah, I got usually there's a pistol and you know $10,000 in cash, a
couple passports,
some tranquilizers, you know, and. Yeah, just in case. You never know, man. You just never know when you gotta just go fuck it and you're gone. And I'm like smoke in the wind.
Speaking of that scenario, have you seen? And I know you have the trailers for the new Bourne movie.
With the guy from Hawkeye from the event.
Jeremy Renner. You know, I don't know the I don't know who's directing it.
I don't know.
I hope it's the same guy that directed the other two. I watched the commentary on the other two movies, and man, he is a tight storyteller. I mean, he walks you through every decision making process that he went through, and you know he just has these real educated and real clear and logical reasons for everything that he did. And I mean the story as far as pace and everything in the
right.
And those movies are near perfect.
They're super tight. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's not necessarily something I would think about.
Well, the last two really were locked into each other. Like there were so many, like even the story, it started. I can't remember how it went, but everyone seen them can recall that. Like the third movie started in the middle of the second movie, or it was something crazy like that. But it was really tight, and it wasn't some wild deviation in the character and the story from part two to part three. Well, it looks like they're kind of sticking to that. That train of thought for this movie, because there's it looks like the chase scene from part three is, you know, aspects of that scene is going to be.
I was almost wondering if like there's a correlation between, you know, did they send him after Michael Bourne at one point, or was he involved? You know, like
Jason
Bourne. I'm sorry. At one point, like I was wondering if that.
Well, it sounds from the trailer like they were getting into the whole like what it is that makes Jason Bourne and his contemporaries the way they are, and it sounded like they were getting into some maybe biological gene therapy. And I don't want them to explain too much. I always figured that Jason Bourne went through holy hell to become this. You know, they wake him up in the middle of the night every night for 2 months, and you know it makes you really good. You know, oh my God, I can tell you what the tag number
they
is.
They just throw him into a pit and make him fight and, like tigers. You know,
yeah. I mean, who knows the training? But I don't want to know too much about it. I don't want.
Yeah, they did in the trailer. They did sort of hint to like he is genetically or scientifically altered, and that's why
your
he's so
chromosomes
good.
Yeah. are off the frickin' charts.
Yeah, and it's like, well, that's a little. I mean,
you got some crazy chromosomes.
Maybe they're trying to Captain America a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
A little, I don't know. But did you do anything for the 4th of July?
I actually had to work on a South Georgia case. I was in Watermelon Country, the watermelon capital of the world.
Where's that?
That is Cordell, Georgia.
Cordell.
And when you go to Cordell, Georgia,
I'm going
to
write that down.
Cordelle.
It's not how I would have spelled it, but
yeah, it's got another E in it. That's kind of crazy, but
I figured there was an I in there somewhere.
No, it's really all farmland, and if you go like in the beginning, the beginning of summer, I mean, you think that you're in some kind of country music video or something because there's, you know, people with cowboy hats and stuff.
Do you like country music?
No, yeah. I hate country music.
Okay,
and
good.
There's a lot of that, of course, in the South, but But I say that because, you know, you see a lot of, like, produce on trucks and people and all that stuff, which, you know me, I love produce and fresh stuff.
I did know that about you, yes. I know you.
Didn't we talk about produce at one point?
Did we?
I don't think we did.
I don't remember talking about produce. No.
I'm big on good fresh.
Oh, well,
that's
good. Then I know what to get you.
Didn't you tell me you were big into asparagus?
Yes, we did talk produce on one of the episodes. We kind of mentioned it briefly, I think. Yeah. I didn't know you were such a fan. I'm a fan
of everything but the asparagus.
Oh, I love asparagus.
I've got two daughters who have been eating asparagus for the past 2 or 3 days, and one of them is still in diapers, and she can put a skunk to
God, I wish I could get my kids to eat asparagus.
Oh my gosh, man, they are just dank. They're just horribly dank.
Horrible little children.
Hey guys, it's Sal. I just wanted to give you a little heads up. This next section of the show, Braxton and I get into talking about The Amazing Spider-Man. We had both seen the film, and we start talking about it, and we do talk about spoilers from the film. So I just want to warn everybody, the next half hour or so is us talking about Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man movie, and there are spoilers involved. So if you haven't seen it yet, you don't want to be spoiled. Either fast forward or just wait until you've seen it and then come back and listen to it.
So I was wondering, did you say you saw that trailer, the Newborn Legacy? Did you see that while seeing Spider-Man?
Seeing another movie? Fishing?
I know.
I saw Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man.
The Amazing Spider-Man.
Did you see it?
I did see it, yes. I did see it. I actually went yesterday, 4th of July, I went and saw it.
What did you think about it?
I liked it. First of all, let me say, I've seen people online, and big shocker, be negative and be like, what do you need to reboot Spider-Man for again? And it's like, you do realize that the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie came out a decade ago. Like, there are entire generations of kids that have not seen that movie or were not around to see it when it came out of theaters. Like, my kids weren't around you know what I mean? So it's like, I don't understand. If you're a Spider-Man fan, first of all, it's been rebooted, you know, 100 times, essentially, in the comics.
Well, we're in this weird world of rebooted movies. Like, I mean, you know, the Hulk was rebooted fairly quickly to a point that, you know, would confuse a lot of people. The Punisher has been rebooted. Oh. That was a reboot, right? I never saw the second one.
They just still can't get it right. I mean, they've done three of them now. The first one.
And then, you know, the X-Men.
First Class.
So that's kind of a weird thing going with that. So I think, you know, maybe the movie-going audience is going to figure it out that, you know, that's kind of the status quo now is – you're going to have different directors come in and they're going to make movies to their liking. I don't know.
Well, I will say about it. I mean, I did enjoy it. I thought it did a nice job of giving you, you know, Peter Parker, a young Peter Parker. And, it still had all the same sort of things in the same ways, your basic kind of, tent poles for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I thought it did have a different feel. I was really impressed with, especially in the beginning of it, the subtlety of certain things. I felt played really well, especially, I like how they showed, Flash Thompson was a dick, but he wasn't a horrible person. He wasn't you know what I mean? Like, he wasn't just this completely evil dude. He was just kind of a high school dick. You know what I mean? Like, big, and he wasn't even that bad. But still,
well,
you know.
That's the way it is with high school. If you remember, like,
yeah,
I mean, through the 4 years that you're there, people kind of, you know, the geeky kids in the beginning turn out to be kind of cool, or it's just there's a weird time or whatever. And I think even in the comics, Flash and Peter,
well, yeah, they ended up being friends, and that, yeah. I did like that.
I did like that too. I thought that was cool. I like the portrayal of Peter. I thought that he was if he was a geek, it was only because he was somewhat brooding. I mean,
well,
that's the thing.
It's like you look at him now, and he's like in that movie, and he's like, oh, he dresses kind of strange,
fashionable
to today. He wears glasses. He's got funny hair, and he skateboards. Oh, he's the coolest kid in school. You know, like,
yeah.
There was a moment where I'm watching it going, yeah, he wouldn't really be a geek. I mean, I have a hard time thinking that. But they never really portrayed him with that. They just portrayed him with having. I thought it was very well done in the idea of, like, he didn't grow up with parents. He grew up with his uncle and aunt. So that would change how he deals with people a little bit. He would probably be a little more mature than some of the other kids his age. So that would kind of, you know, set him to this in a different realm a little bit. He liked science. He was very intelligent.
Yeah.
All the things that can make you in high school, not a geek, but sort of weird, yeah, or, you know, strange to the.
And he did have some baggage with his dad,
yeah,
or his,
yeah,
parents, but his dad, you know.
But I thought Garfield, I thought, did a great job as capturing the goofy, funny, quipping Spider-Man.
Yeah.
When he was spinning around, running around, and joking, and I thought he got that as well as I've seen. I mean,
I don't know how much of Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, or Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, was actually him in the suit. Maybe a good bit of it, but something about Garfield's
body language.
He had a very rich, expressive body language that he would, and it really made Spider-Man really, you know, cool. I mean, you wanted to see more of him.
Quirky. It was, yeah. He had this strange sort of. Oh, and I loved going back to the subtlety. I loved the scene where he starts to figure out his powers, and it all starts with him skateboarding, and then, you know, he goes into, like, he starts climbing the wall. But it was done so well where it was
like a Footloose scene too.
Yeah, right. But it also felt like natural. Like, it wouldn't be this huge dramatic.
He was doing skateboard tricks and stuff, and then he's slowly incorporating the wall into
feet sticking onto the board and different. And it was a slow burn. It was not just like this, holy crap, I can climb.
I'm going to jump from this roof to that roof.
Right. And not to say that that other way is wrong at all, but.
No, not at all.
I just thought it was cool that they were able to do it a different way. And stuff like that. And then, of course, Emma Stone is just, I don't know that I could be more infatuated with an actress than
the only her. Problem I had with her, and this wasn't even a problem in the movie. It was just something I noticed. I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. It's just that she's a high school student, and she felt like a senior employee with Oscorp.
No, I mean, well, she said that. She was a senior in high school, and she had been working there for, I think, a couple. She had interned there, and then she was working there, and it seemed like, I mean, yeah, maybe a little.
And that's a stupid. That's just something that I was like, wow, she's got the access.
Well,
to
yeah, that was the like, in the, and we I guess we should say spoilers, but, yeah, when she goes running back to Oscorp and is able to get access to everything, that I did think the same thing. I'm like, oh, wow, really? A high school student would have that kind of access to, like,
the super
private, you know? Yeah.
What do they make there? They're making, I think, weapons and stuff,
it was genetic. I don't know. They didn't really get into it.
They said at one point, they said, but one thing about it, it's pretty clear, and we are talking spoilers, right?
Yeah, we should have probably said so in the beginning, but yeah, that's...
But this isn't a major spoiler, but
right.
It's pretty clear that Norman Osborn is, he's in the story. He's going to be, and I think the director has, he's already signed on to do 2 and 3.
Yeah, but he also said, like, the scene at the end, he said that's not Norman Osborn.
Well, why did he say that?
Because he said it's not. Because people asked him, and he said, no, it's not.
He's just fucking with us.
Well, maybe. I don't know, but...
Who else would it be? Certainly
well,
not Parker's dad.
The popular theory at this point is that it's Electro. Because he did.
Why would it be Electro? And that
because
would be,
he's the
because awesome
it's
because
it's the what is it the Secret Six or whatever the or not the Secret Six. What is
it? We don't have any reason to believe it to be Electro.
Well, but here's the thing: how does not Norman Osborn just show up in that cell and then he disappears and he doesn't have any powers at this point? And even if he did,
I just assumed that he, you know, he had pulled strings or being Norman Osborn.
No, I mean,
he owns that big, huge building in it.
He literally like appeared and then disappeared in that cell during lightning strikes.
Oh my God, man! I'd love to see some Electro action.
Right?
I tell you what, I want to see this director's take on the Green Goblin.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
All day long.
Well, and you wonder like, are they gonna kill Gwen off, you know, are they gonna
her famous, just like her dad. I mean, he's a character that was basically written to be killed.
Yeah,
did she
yeah.
die? I don't
oh,
know
yeah,
much
yeah.
about.
Gwen died. It was the Green Goblin. Norman had thrown her off of a bridge, and Peter tried to save her by shooting webbing at her to catch her, and it ended up breaking her neck. The jolt of it broke her neck. So he always felt guilty that he had actually killed her. Pretty deep stuff for, you know, the 1960s when they, you know, like that was a big deal. And that's why there's so many people like, you know, me and you and guys our age, people our age don't necessarily
Dude, I don't
have,
think I could take it if that happens in to her.
To Emma Stone, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what else about the movie did you like? What did you think about the web shooters?
I thought the web shooters were pretty cool. I liked how they, you know, I liked how they were able to kind of show him building it, yet, you know, it wasn't like an 18-year-old kid comes up with, you know, one of the
most
amazing.
He had a little help.
Yeah, he had a little help, which would make more sense, you know what I mean? Because it's like, okay, he creates like one of the most amazing inventions of, you know, all time, probably, you know. It's like,
well, you know, science was the same thing in Batman where you think, well, they would be able to figure out whose webbing that is, because, you know, Oscorp has those commercials where that webbing is kind of featured, so they just say, well, it came from Oscorp.
Right.
You know, and same with, you know, Batman Begins, a lot of the Tumblr and all that.
Yeah, you'd kind of think, but... You know, I guess at some point
it's funner not to even
right to pick at the strings.
I had seen where a lot of people were complaining about the LEDs on the device, and I thought that they were perfect with it. I mean, it kind of and he used them so cool. They were really he was like a quick draw McGraw about it using those web slingers.
Yeah, he definitely, I mean, I thought the LEDs were okay because it gave you a point of reference when he shot, you know what I mean? Like, you knew when he was shooting them. I don't know if you needed them or not. It didn't bother me necessarily.
It just reminded you that they were technological in nature.
Right. I like the costume. I thought he did look great. Like, he just moved right, and he looked creepy, and, you know, he looked very spidery because he was thin and kind of gangly and not...
Yeah, he did not need to be...
all buffed out or anything.
No, not at all. And I kind of felt like I'm not even sure. I think in one scene they addressed where his costume came from. And I'm still not sure how he made it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he did something. He was researching spandex, and then the next thing you know, he's standing over some Xerox type device making it.
Well, no, that was a screen print. Like, he's doing old school screen print on it. with, you know, like you do in high school, yeah. which was kind of interesting. But then you see the costume, it's like, yeah, that's not, I don't think that's screen print. That looks like,
that looks like, maybe a $3,000
yeah, right.
sign. Bunch of guys made that.
But yeah, I, you know, there were things the one thing I will say is as it got more and more action orientated, I got a little, I thought it got a little cheesy. I thought it started to feel a little cheesy once the lizard showed up and
they're fighting in the school and he crawls around him and webs him up like a spider with a bumblebee.
Well, that was okay. I mean, that wasn't too bad. I didn't mind that, but then, and I really liked the first encounter where, you know, where Kurt Connor was actually like trying to help when he went after the Oscorp guy on the bridge. Like, he was actually trying to stop him from going to the whatever old folks home and injecting them with the serum. So I kind of like that, because I mean, that was sort of the thing with, and that's the theme with a lot of his rogues gallery, is like, they're just sort of misunderstood. They weren't necessarily evil, other than Norman was, you know, psychotic and evil, but a lot of the other guys were just kind of like, you know, on hard times or pushed into a scenario where they couldn't figure, you know, that kind of thing. And Kurt was, you know, he was sort of doing it out of vanity to some degree. You know, he wanted his arm back, that kind of stuff. And so I kind of like that. But then once it got to where, like, he was trying to stop Peter and it got really big, I thought it fell apart a little bit. Like, it did so well doing the subtle, quiet things that when it got really big, I didn't feel it as much. I didn't feel as maybe connected to it as much, but I kind of dug the lizard.
That's very interesting. I agree with that. And a lot of, I mean, it's, you can tell a good story if you keep it in the small moments or whatever.
Yeah. I just think maybe, you know, who knows? I don't know what the
but I mean, you know, hey, I still think the movie did really well. But, you know, any superhero movie, no matter how good, even Batman Begins and that whole line, always at the end, your brain starts to, you start kind of, I don't want to say maybe an element of fatigue, but you're kind of, okay, I know they're going to do Spider-Man 3. Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man 3, the fight scene at the end, I was ready. I was looking to the door. I mean, because
right. Well, that was a terrible movie from the beginning.
Yeah.
So it's hard to keep you that. But look at, like, the Avengers. I wasn't tired. You know what I mean? Like,
you know what? You got me. I wasn't tired a bit there.
Yeah. I mean, there's as big a fight scenes in that as in anything else. But you know what I mean? Like, and like Batman, Batman Returns, The Dark Knight Returns. I mean, that movie was, to me, super intense and like a tour de force, you know.
It seems like all of these big superhero movies, the final fight scenes, they have to be epic. It's very rare if you're going to have some, and you know, you can have some great storytelling, you know, device or turn of events or whatever in small battles and conflicts, but you can't do that in the big movies or in the big superhero movies. You got to have this, you know, giant alien monsters coming around. And
I understand
that. You
got to
be on top
of
the building and, you know, shit's got to fall. Immediately, it's funny, immediately that device, the aerosol device, I knew exactly when they introduced it, oh, well, the lizard's going to try.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, I mean, that's the perfect sort of,
delivery mechanism.
Smoke, yeah. It's the shotgun on the wall, you know? Yeah. I just knew that was going to be, used later on. And that's the kind of thing, like I said, I think, you know, and who knows with a studio like that, like how many people have input and who's, you know, I don't even know who directed this movie. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even know who directed The Amazing Spider-Man.
I don't know his first name. His last name's Webb.
Is it really?
Yeah. That's he's kind of a, sense, huh? I think that he's only done music videos or something.
Okay. Well, I just think that sometimes, you know, I think he did the small things really well, and I think when it got to the big stuff that maybe it was more than, you know, they could handle with. I just think it's really important to, if you're going to do the big stuff, you have to lead it. You have to lead to it in the right way. Like, you have to get there right. And then you can do, you know what I mean? Like, if you get there right, then you can do big. But if you don't get there right, then it just sort of is hollow a little bit. And it wasn't, I don't want to say, I don't want you to think that I thought it was bad. I didn't think it was bad at all. It was entertaining, and I liked it. No, I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was good. It certainly wasn't like a Hulk or, you know, like Spider-Man 3 or something like that, where it was just bad. It was.
Did you not like The Incredible Hulk, Edward Norton?
No, I liked that, well, up until the fight scene, I thought was terrible at the end.
Yeah, that's another one where the fight scene was like.
Because they don't get there right. They don't, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make
sense. Well, it felt, you know, and you can't blame. That movie's great. I absolutely loved it. I love the way they introduced the mythos of the super soldier serum. And but I mean, what are you going to do? You got two giant green monsters fighting in Harlem. I mean, it's going to look like cutscenes from video games.
But it doesn't have to. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you can't just go, well, what are you going to do? No, you have all the time and resources you could possibly want. Make it good. It's possible. It's not impossible. You have to. It's like anything else.
You know what I'd like to see is, and you know, this may come at us in 10 years. I would say from Marvel Studios or something is more of a superhero, and they're out there. I don't know of any that are really particularly good, but like a superhero movie that has an the sensibilities of an independent film, you know?
Well,
where they try to go at things from with a different formula.
Well, I think this one did in the beginning, like, you know, and I was just looking up, it's Mark Webb is the director, and he directed 500 Days of Summer. I don't know.
Oh, it's a good movie.
Yeah. And so you get that, you know, same sort of indie, feel of it. And you could see why he did those things real well, but then it's like, okay, but we need you to have him fighting this giant monster at the end. And it, you know what I mean? And it's like, it may be just out of his wheelhouse, you know, sometimes it just doesn't fit. And he, you know, but he's got to do it because that's what, it's a summer blockbuster, so you got to do what you got to do. I mean, I just think, I don't know. I mean, like I said, it wasn't bad. I enjoyed it. I was never like.
Oh, ready, I enjoyed you know, it too. I think a lot of people are pleasantly surprised by it.
Yeah, I mean, I did really like it, and
absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, I was thinking when you said doing a superhero movie, like, have you seen Super, the Rainn Wilson movie?
No.
It's
Is that the one that's, like, surprisingly violent?
Yes, yes. It's surprisingly twisted and violent and strange and very dark. But in the same, you know, in the same sense, it's also sort of, it's kind of an independent superhero movie. I mean, he essentially is a superhero, just sort of a very misguided and slightly psychotic superhero. And you know,
but it's like, but that's a little bit of comic. Well, would you think of M. Night Shyamalan's
Unbreakable?
Yeah, would you classify that as maybe a independent vision for a superhero movie?
I don't know if I'd classify that. I mean, independent, I don't know what you even classify that as. Like,
well, you know what I'm trying to say.
No,
without,
I know what you're trying to say.
I don't know any other
smaller
words.
Film. It's a small.
I guess just like I said, some movie that isn't following the somewhat formulaic big summer blockbuster.
Right. Movie. Unbreakable, certainly, I think, wasn't. It wasn't. It wasn't a superhero movie. It was, you know what I mean? Like, you didn't even realize it was a superhero movie until it was over.
No. So, that movie left you wanting, but it was really intriguing. I mean, the story, and it's a cult hit. I mean, it's certainly...
Oh, I love Unbreakable. Yeah. I think it's awesome. And I think Shyamalan, I don't understand that dude, because he makes some awesome movies, and then he makes some terrible, 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 awful, just shit movies. Yeah. And
he's kind of good. I think he's got a special thing going, but I don't want to say he's kind of a one-trick pony, but his signature is definitely on his films. I mean, you could tell they're his.
Well, I always, thought that he was maybe a victim of his own success, because, like, he did Sixth Sense, and it was such a huge hit that he started making movies like this. He started going, okay, here's my twist ending, now how do I write to that? And I thought that was the mistake that he started to make, was like, he was more concerned with how do I end it so people will go, oh my God, instead of, necessarily writing a good movie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, The Sixth Sense is cool because of the ending is shocking and surprising, but it's a really good movie even without that. It just happens.
Yeah, and you can tell that he's a lover of the geeky things that us geeks like, or whatever, the paranormal things, aliens,
right,
powers, or psychic abilities.
Marvel Now thing?
No, what is that? I hadn't heard a thing about it.
Well, evidently it was announced through Entertainment Weekly, which is now seems like the go-to place for Marvel to announce big stuff, because I guess there's so many comic book fans that read Entertainment Weekly. But I guess they're kind of rebooting and reshuffling the Marvel Universe to some degree. According to Tom Brevoort, they're going to have there are three new series: Uncanny Avengers, All New X-Men, and a relaunched Avengers title. With Uncanny Avengers is going to be by Rick Remender and, as yet, I believe, an unnamed artist. And it's an ongoing series, and it's sort of going to be a super team of Avengers and X-Men.
Oh.
The Avengers book is... I don't even know who's going to be on that. Bendis is taking over the X-Men book, the all-new X-Men. He's leaving the Avengers, and I think Hickman is taking over Avengers proper.
So it's just basically a shifting of creators and maybe a couple new titles.
Yeah, I don't know. They keep saying, "Well, this isn't a reboot. We're not reshifting things. We're not rebooting stuff." He says some of the landscape of the Marvel Universe would be different at the end of Avengers versus X-Men. Things have changed a bunch, but. I don't know. I do believe, like, and I'm not reading it, so I don't know, but I believe that at the end of Avengers vs. X-Men that Jean Grey is coming back, Phoenix is coming back. So with that, like, anything could happen, really. I mean, you could theoretically do anything you wanted. Mm. Because, she kind of has the ability to do whatever she wants, but... I don't know. They keep saying they're not relaunching. They're not doing this in response. You know, like a lot of people have said, this is sort of in response to the DC 52. You know,
I don't see how it's that big of a. I mean, it's just like a. I don't know, a new book essentially. I don't see how it's a big. I like Cyclops' new look. I'm kind of looking around online.
His Phoenix look? People were saying he looks like...
Is that what that is?
Yeah, well, I evidently...
Looks like Judge Dredd. Was that who you were going to say?
Oh, yeah. Nightwing from the DC. He looks like Nightwing's costume. Yeah, evidently, the Phoenix Force has come back to Earth. And it is now split up into three or four different mutants, Cyclops being one. And I think, I don't even know who the other ones are, Storm and Namor and maybe one other one. So it's split up in between them, and they're like, I guess I should have read all this before we talked about it, but I guess it doesn't really matter. But, So that's, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure what this big, and you know, it's a big, they're making a big deal about it, but really, yeah, it just sounds like we're going to have two new books and there's going to be a different creator on the Avengers is what it seems like. So no, does, you know, what does that mean for like Uncanny X-Men or, you know, the other X-Men books or that kind of stuff? I don't know. They haven't really said. So, yeah, it's, I think they just have to have a big announcement every year, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know,
I don't know, man. I mean, you know me, I don't read a lot of Marvel or DC, other than we're doing the whole 52 thing. It's DC, but, I'll dip my toe in every so often, but I like to read. I like to read the independents.
So indie books. What are you reading? Anything? Are you reading?
What did I read last? The last thing that I read. Well, I read Frankenstein, Agent of Shade at your
beckoning.
Well,
we're not going to talk about that now though, because we're gonna do an episode.
We'll save that one.
Yeah, we'll save that for. We're gonna do an episode on that one.
Really,
maybe we can get Lemire on for that. And you can tell him how much you loved it.
Yeah, I did like it.
All right, let's not get into it. Don't spoil anything.
Okay. I'm trying to think of what I've read recently.
I don't know. I can't tell you.
I picked up H.P. Lovecraft. Someone did. I don't even know who the artist. I guess the writer, of course, was H.P. Lovecraft. But I picked up a comic version of The Mountains of Madness.
Oh, really?
Have you seen it on the shelves at Challengers or anything?
I have not. I haven't been to Challengers in a little while. But
it was good. It was good because I absolutely love that story. And you know, it's funny, man. H.P. Lovecraft. I don't know why some of the things, because when you get into the actual monsters that he's describing, they're kind of not so scary. You know, bat wings and with tentacles, and this thing actually looks like a cucumber if you were to draw it. But I don't know. It's just that whole idea for that movie. And I learned that Guillermo del Toro was actually going to make.
He was working on.
Oh, my God.
On that.
I realize how awesome that movie would be. He would make cucumber scary as hell.
Terrifying cucumber salad.
Yeah, and he would stick with it. I mean, he would stick with Lovecraft's design.
Oh, I don't know if he would. I mean.
Oh, yeah, he would, but he would put. He would put some kind of.
I mean, I love his character designs and stuff from most of his films are just so fantastic.
Well, I think
what
that's kind of his background.
What was the one with the little kid?
the Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh God, I love that movie. That's just so awesome and such a great like fable. You know what I mean? Like it's like a fairy tale, like a scary fairy tale. It's so good. But yeah, I had heard that too. A guy I work with is a big Lovecraft fan, and he was really looking forward to the idea of him
of
making
that movie being
made. Of Del Toro making.
Yeah, I
but
think
I think it's
he
I think
put
it's
to bed. He's not going to do it.
Yeah, unfortunately. Are you a big Cthulhu fan? Are you a Lovecraft fan?
You know, I kind of came into it about a year ago. I picked up all of Boom Studios' Tales of Cthulhu, I think. The series. There's a couple of anthologies. And I don't know how, that knowing myself like I know myself, I would never have pegged myself to be an H.P. Lovecraft fan, but I really enjoyed it, and I started. Do you ever like read about anything, and then you start researching it, and
you
want to get in on every aspect of it? Well, I was like that with a lot of H.P. Lovecraft stuff.
I should be someone's research assistant because I'm like a research junkie. Like I get into stuff and I want to know everything about something. And
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like I want to know, you know, the where's and why's and how's of stuff. And yeah, I've probably read more about Lovecraft than his actual works. Strangely enough, like I don't know that I've read that much.
He was a xenophobic racist type guy, but he had a lot of weird quirks about him. I
just love that, you know, and this is nothing new for anyone that's obviously a fan of his, but I just love the idea that he was so willing and wanting of other authors to work in that world. I just think that is like one of his great.
Well, it worked for him, and it added to the mystique of the Necronomicon, you know, because I think only recently I realized that's not a real book.
Not a real book?
Know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I know that there are still people that believe that that's, you know.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, hey.
I mean, I've got friends who, you know, when growing up in like the suburbs of Chicago in the 80s, you know, like I have friends that like thought that they were into, you know, like black magic and, you know, that kind of stuff. And it was like, you know, for sure, I guarantee I know guys that like still to this day think that that's a real book, an ancient, you know, book and stuff like that. And,
yeah.
You know, it goes hand in hand with heavy metal and teenage angst.
Yeah. H.P. Lovecraft he introduced a whole new. All right. So it's either you had aliens or you had angels and demons. You know, that was your two choices when it came to science fiction or what have you, or fantasy, whatever. But he was able to successfully meld the two somehow in this strange thing that he – and you've seen it – we've seen it all our lives. I mean, from Ghostbusters to – and you name it. It's Hellboy. I mean, especially Hellboy.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
just – it's so
– the influences that he's had on
– it's in every – and I really like – I like the mystery of his – because you can't really define a lot of his stuff, and the scariest part of his world and his niche is the undefined thing that it is. You know, all you know is that if you delve into it too much, you fucking go insane.
The shadows,
your eyes will pop out of your head.
The shadows, the shadow. Well, yeah, that was the genius. It's like, you know, I'm going to tell you a scary story, but if you ask too many questions, you may lose your mind. You know, like how genius.
You have got me interested now.
You know, like how genius is that? It's like
yeah.
I'm going to make a cult of people that are, on one hand, going to be so interested in what I'm writing, but on the other hand, so afraid of it. But both things are going to make them not be able to put it down.
But see, here's the thing about Lovecraft, and at least this is my opinion, is that his stuff, as he tells it, as I read and listened to the rundown on a lot of his books and stuff, and things are described, and too much, then I start to be like, you know. Especially the aliens or whatever it was in the mouth of or in the mountains of madness, it was kind of, I don't know, there was too much definition attached to the threat that, and it started to lose its mystery or whatever.
You like the lie, you like the yeah. illusion. I can see yeah. that. I mean, you don't. It's like, I don't, you know, there's part of me that wants to know how the magic trick is done, but there's also part of me that just wants to enjoy watching the magic trick.
Yeah.
You know, I don't always want someone to tell me how something works. Sometimes I just want to experience it as it is supposed to be performed.
I would like to write or work on a Cthulhu story.
Well, there's nothing stopping you, buddy. I mean,
well, I don't know what's going on with that whole boom thing, but I would.
It's open. It's
I would
open.
Like
I mean,
to
it's,
contribute to that. That was pretty cool.
You can just do your own. I mean, there's no. That's the beautiful thing. It's
there
public.
Is, the sky is the limit.
Yeah, do your own. Well, speaking, you know, you mentioned something off air before that you had read that I think. Sort of fits in with the Cthulhu stuff is the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. You said you read 2009, the latest.
Yeah, and you didn't read it, right?
I have not read it yet. I still have to read 1969 and 2009. I haven't been in the mind space for it.
You know what? I didn't tell you this earlier, but I didn't pick up 1969.
Oh, really? You just went
straight? No, and I
did you pick up the
As
first
I was
one?
Reading, I could, I saw that. Oh my God, I missed
the second one.
I didn't read that.
Did you read the first one?
What was the first one?
That
was the one where
1909 or whatever.
Yeah, I read that one. That was the daughter of Submarine Joe. Whatever was it, Nemo, right?
Yeah.
I read that one. But I could tell where I had missed. But it was everything that happened in 1969, I think, was adequately repeated. And I knew exactly what happened. So probably the things that I missed in 1969 was the esoteric references that, let's be honest, they're probably going to go over my head anyway.
Right.
Well, not all of them.
Because you're not that bright.
Let's face it. I'm just the topical stuff, please. Ass.
Well, no, and like I say, I understand, like, it's, you need cliff notes to read that stuff now. Like,
it would be more enjoyable.
And I think that's why I haven't read them yet, because I know that I'm going to have to go into research mode. Because, I mean, I'm pretty well read, but... You know, not on, like, you know, stuff.
It seemed like I was on my iPhone as I was reading it, and I think there might be some kind of special Wikipedia page devoted to all of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen books.
Annotated?
Yeah, I think that there might be.
Well, I know there is for most of his other works, and I know people have done it for Grant Morrison stuff, but a lot of times it's not enough information.
You want more, especially if you're a hound for research or whatever.
What's the guy, Jeff Nevins? Jess Nevins? I think it's Jess Nevins. Have you seen either of his books?
Negative.
He has done a couple of books on...
Salem Witch Trials?
No, no, no. He did annotations. He did a couple
what
of...
What if I nailed it?
Yeah, Salem Witch... It was Salem Witch... exactly. He did... you know, how to, you know, living in Salem when you're a witch and Salem Nights. So I think it was the other one, Salem Nights.
So
no,
psychic.
He did, a bunch of, annotated, stuff for, he did annotations for the original League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He's done, but then I think he started working with, he might have started working with more. I'm not sure, but he put out a book called Fantastic Victoriana, which was like it's
sounds like a steampunk joint right there.
It's a guide on like the Victorian era literature. So he actually has printed out annotations for League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I think it's called Heroes and Monsters.
Yeah.
Is the first one. And I can't think of the second one. But that's the stuff you need sitting down and to figure out what the hell Alan Moore is talking about, because it's in-depth.
Where did the Wally gag or whatever that thing... I know who...
Wally gag.
Whatever crazy blackface character is that hangs out with what's his name? Prospero? I know who he is. You never read the I shouldn't say because you didn't read 2009.
No, I don't know who, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, well, he was in. He took him to the Blazing World or whatever it's called, in the hot air balloon.
In 1969, or which volume?
I think it might have been
1910.
I
don't remember it.
I don't know either, but I mean, that's one...
this is just us going, I don't know, I'm not sure, I don't remember.
Yeah, I never knew where that character came from.
I'd have to go back and look.
But I felt like, you know, of course, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the first two are easily to digest, and then the next several, he gets into... The more esoteric and...
Well, what I feel like he... You know, I always felt like Moore was so good at blending the two. Like, he would give you all the strange little things and the annotations and all the little footnotes and all the little clever winks and nods and stuff inside a really entertaining story.
Yeah.
And I think
it's a story that doesn't follow any... I mean, the first two had that adventure... You know, you felt like you just ate a meal. And then the others, they were enjoyable because you didn't know who's going to die or who's going to live, who's going to be the true heroes that persevere throughout the long narrative. But they definitely, the latter ones feel so much different than I know what it was. It was the Black Dossier. That was the one where the what is that damn thing called? The did you ever read the Black Dossier?
Yes.
The very end, the big creature, the black creature, looked like a tar baby type thing.
Oh, what the hell is it called?
And I never did Wikipedia, like where that came from or what story that was from. But it looked so odd, you know, amid the other characters, because it was from it looked like some kind of animated drawn type mascot to something you'd see on a, you know, package of, tobacco or something. I don't know. Just some crazy looking thing. But I like what they did with James Bond in 2009. I think you'll like it. And he was actually featured a little bit in Black Dossier.
James Bond?
Well, in Fleming's, you know, his whole line of books, I guess. His M and his whole mythos.
I gotta read him. I think
did
I'm
you
just,
even read Black Dossier?
I did, but it was when did that come out? I mean, that was years ago. My brain's like freaking marshmallows.
I don't know.
Dude. That was 2007.
Yeah,
that's like 5 years ago. I don't remember it. Come on, give me a break. You know how many comics I've read since then?
I guess, man.
Yeah. You keep doing this to me too. You do this in the shows, like, hey, do you remember what was this thing? And then I sound like an idiot because I can't remember.
I need somebody to.
It's called Google, motherfucker. Use it.
If I start Googling stuff, you're going to start to chop up.
Well, anyway, you liked 2009. You enjoyed it?
Yeah, it was good.
Okay.
It was good.
Good Lord, that was like dragging my dick through sand.
Well, it would have been better if you read it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, maybe I'll have to. Like I said, I think I'm just not in the... I'm not right now in my life, like, I'm not looking for really complex sort of stuff that I have to kind of dive into. And
I've been like that.
Yeah, I'll get back to that at some point, because, you know, I loved... But see, here's how my weird brain thinks, too, or how I kind of react to stuff, is I go, well, it's been so long since I've read League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, I want to go back to the beginning and read it all... You know, like in one kind of sitting, from the very first League of Extraordinary Gentlemen all the way through to 2009. You know, but that's like some sort of, you know, torture almost to put yourself through to.
Well, is 2009 it?
I believe so. He did. I know there was talk about maybe doing some one shot sort of. Things in the world of them, but I think that's it for now, at least, unless he comes up with something else. But I think that's all he plans on doing with the league.
Yeah, there's been a lot of other people that have come up with things that are kind of like the league, where you take
historical
characters and have them come together or what have you. And he definitely is the progenitor of that. I think he did it right.
Yeah, it seems to be. I mean, it's really kind of,
and it's another thing is you couldn't get another artist at all to delve in that world. You have to stick with Kevin O'Neill.
Yeah. I really like Kevin O'Neill. He's one of those guys that draws, like, I sit there and go, God, that shouldn't work. Like, that, you know, some of the stuff he draws, I shouldn't like nearly as much as I do.
Mm.
Because it's so weird, like, some of the stuff he'll draw is just not right. You know what I mean? Like, it's...
Yeah.
Well,
you know, a lot of
so
artists
well.
That I do that with, but I think it's the writer that saves them, you know? Because if you're adequately immersed in a story... I mean, it's just like with Guy Davis back in the day. I could not get with him at all, and you know, it was heartbreaking when he left BPRD, because
right.
that was
he
his.
Was.
He was the vehicle you were riding in, and you were used to it, and he had some really strong moments, and I think that. You know, he got looser and looser as it went on, but I don't know. You can forgive a lot of art as long as the story is good enough. And, you know, as long as the storytelling and the art is competent, I mean.
Did you ever read Martial Law?
No, what is that?
That's Kevin O'Neill. He did that with Pat Mills back in late 80s. It was through...
It's Pat Mills. Is that a folk singer?
Yes, he was a folk singer and also
Crosby, Mills, and Stash.
He was also a British comic writer. But yeah, when he wasn't doing folk music in Crosby. I don't know. He hasn't done that much, quite honestly. I don't know what else even. I'm sure he did stuff like in 2000 AD and in Britain, you know, and that I just don't. I'm not familiar with.
Did he do any Dredd?
Oh, I'm sure he did, because if you read Martial Law, it's basically like take Dredd and make him into, like, take him way over the top. Yeah, basically, Martial Law is about a character. Oh, God, I can't believe you haven't read it. I love Martial Law. You need to go and get, if you can find those.
All right, I'm going
to
Google it, but if you get funky.
No, Martial Law, he's basically, he is a law enforcement officer set in sort of a future post-apocalyptic metropolis of San Francisco, and he is a cape killer. Basically, being a superhero, being a superhero or supervillain, or, you know, it's against the law. And it's his job to put you down.
Well, he looks awesome. That's a cool design.
Yeah.
Character design.
And it's crazy over the top. And I mean, it's really good. They kept talking about doing a collected edition. I remember talking to, Top Shelf, Chris Staros at Top Shelf at one time, I know, was talking about they were trying to put together the collected edition of Martial Law. I don't know. I hope that's coming out, because it deserves it. It's really good. I mean, it's so over the top, and it's very, you know, adult, and it's, you know, it's hyper violent and sexual and strange, and, you know,
to read. Before I read Martial Law, I hang my head down low. I need to read some Judge Dredd.
I have to admit that they have the reboot of the movie coming out, and I have not read that much Dredd. I actually even have some here that I got from
Chris. There's some really good looking collections that, you know, some shelf eye candy that I want to get.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing the big ones now, aren't they? Doing like the big.
But that's one where I really wouldn't know where to start unless those collections are. I feel like there's so much out there with Dredd.
Well, you know, and I think you wouldn't even want to start at the beginning necessarily, because it's probably, you know, the best stuff is probably not till later on, and you probably just want to grab, like, the collected, you know, good storylines and stuff, because I'm sure there's a lot of shit too, you know, because it's been published for a long ass time in 2000 AD.
We need to get Matt Burden to tell us.
Is Burden he's the Dredd?
Well, he's British.
He is British, so he should know, right?
Yeah.
They get that in the mail, like they get just issued Judge Dredd magazine.
We have the pokey little puppy over here when we grow up, you know. Over there, they read Judge Dredd.
What the hell is the pokey little puppy?
You never, the little bitty book, the pokey little puppy. You never had
no,
that?
I'm
going to email you a picture of the cover of this book, and you're going to start crying with memories.
The pokey little.
You're going to remember it. You'll remember that.
I don't think I will.
Puppy. You'll start crying immediately.
I think that's a Southern thing. I think.
Well, we had it then.
I don't think we had that up here in the north.
You know, I got to get this out because it's going to happen, and I want somewhere to be a record of me calling it out.
Wow.
You know what's going to make a huge return?
What?
Ninjas.
Have ninjas ever gone away?
Well, they've become a little bit of
a joke, kind
of clown, a little bit of clown shoes with ninjas.
Right, right. I agree.
And I think they're coming back in a huge,
like,
way.
Badass, just like, you know, not, actual.
I think they're going to stick with the same old retro. They're going to be treated as a retro type thing.
So the nostalgia of Ninja.
Yeah.
Ninja-stalgia.
Before I do a
why do you
Hulu-esque comic, I'd like to do a ninja.
Why do you think ninjas are going to make such a...
Intuition, so.
It's just a feeling. Just
pure intuition.
Well, you are a detective, right? Technically, that is...
Yeah, but that, you know, that's... That's a whole nother muscle brain.
I do have to agree, though. I haven't read much Judge Dredd, and I feel kind of guilty about it because he's such a... I mean, quite honestly, it's like the only British comic character that I even know about. You know, like, could you name another British comic character?
Off
the top of your head, anything?
Well, immediately Union Jack kind of comes to mind.
Well, yeah, but he's not. He didn't. I mean, he's a. That's an American.
Yeah. Okay.
That's like saying Captain Britain. That's not. That's not a British. You know what I mean? Like that came from there. That, you know, is published there. I have no idea. Like I, and that's just my own.
All those books, some babes from the 2000 are the. Oh gosh, I'm doing it again to you. What's the name of the magazine?
2000 AD.
Oh, it's 2000 AD. It is 2000 AD.
Yes.
Like them and their boobs.
Well, but that's Judge Dredd is in 2000 AD.
Right. I don't know. There's not another one that I can think of. Dan Dare. Kaboom.
Yeah, but you only know that one because it came back for like 2 minutes.
Well, you asked. It's all Dan Dare. All right.
I guess I'll give you Dan Dare.
Where's my medal?
That's pretty good, Dan Dare. It's better than I don't think I could come up without Google, but.
I didn't even have Google.
You know how many British
martial law pulled up.
Just annoying the shit out of so many Brits right now. We have a lot of British listeners. We're probably very angry. Sorry, guy. Hey, let us know. Email us and let us know.
Well, we're going to get that and the whole dwarf thing.
Dwarfs. We pissed off a lot of dwarfs.
That was a bit insensitive. Honestly, it was. And I was talking about fictional, the mythological depiction of a dwarf. I wasn't talking about like actual.
So like
people.
Dwarves, not.
That's what I was referring
you're
to.
Like the underground, the short little.
Miners.
Money grubber.
Singing songs about whatever they
do. Hi ho, hi ho. It's off to work we go. Da, 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 that kind of.
Yep.
Mythical dwarf. Not the real life short person.
Not the people that live with us and all that good stuff.
Are there other works of comic book, you know, like epic comic book stuff out there that you haven't read that you're ashamed to admit to that I'm going to make you admit to now?
Something that everyone has read that I have not. I've never read any of the Why the Last Man books.
Yeah, okay.
Never read any Fables.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, never read. Because everyone says, oh, if you can make it past that first trade. I don't want to make it past anything. I want to feel some entertainment, you know? I don't have time to
trudge. Of Fables? People say the first trade of Fables is bad?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say that the first trade isn't representative of the whole thing. Which,
well,
you know.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's that different or that far off. I mean, it definitely gets better as it goes, but I don't think like that first trade is horrible where you have to, you know, just fight your way through it or anything like that. I don't think.
What about you?
I've read everything.
I can't believe you never read Judge Dredd.
Well, I've read some, but very little. I mean, I couldn't tell you much about, you know, like any of his big storylines, or I don't know that much about. I've read very, very little about Judge Dredd. And what I did read was like back in the, you know, 80s when, you know, the sort of black and white British stuff was coming out and black and white comics were, you know, big. And I read some of, you know, I would pick up the occasional 2000 AD, but Judge Dredd was just sort of like another story in there to me. You know, I don't get a lot of British stuff that people really enjoy. Like Doctor Who, I don't like Doctor Who at all. I never have. I
like Tom Baker, the all teeth and curls guy, just because out of nostalgia.
See, my best friend growing up was a huge Doctor Who fan, and I hated it.
Angela's dad, if you look at pictures, like recent pictures of Tom Baker now.
I don't even know who Tom Baker is. He was the big scarf.
Tom Baker was all Mr. Teeth and curls and
yeah.
The long scarf. That was
He was the guy that I kept going, how did this guy get on television?
Well, he actually played Rasputin in a really good movie about Rasputin, the Tsar and Tsarina and all that stuff.
Right.
And he did a really good job as Mad Monk.
Have you read Petrograd yet?
Hang on. I'm not finished with my
All right. Book. Go ahead.
Angela's dad looks exactly like Tom Baker looks today. I mean, it's hilarious. They look so much alike. All right, go ahead.
Do you just keep buying them scarfs for Christmas? Just go, you know, just kind of...
He wouldn't get it.
I know, but that would make it even better. Like, if he just buy him scarves and, like, didn't he wear trench coats, right? Didn't he? I think he wore
a big hat.
Big hat. You should just keep buying him that stuff for his birthday and Christmas and see if he'll just wear it out of, you know, just sort of duty because you get it for him. That would be funny. I think you should do that. I think you should definitely do that, Braxton.
All right, I will.
And then take pictures and put it on the internet for me.
I'll send you a picture of him shooting a bird. It's pretty funny.
Is he a hunter?
No, shooting his middle finger.
Bird. Shooting the bird. I gotcha.
Never read Petrograd.
Petrograd. I haven't. I have it, and I was at the Challengers here, did a gallery opening with the artist, so I saw a lot of the original art that was there, which was really cool. I almost bought a page because it was very cool. But I have not read it yet. It looks fantastic, and it's a great little book. I mean, it's a great little
You know what? If we do a you read this, I read that episode and talk about it, that may be my choice.
All right. We could, yeah.
Just like with Cthulhu or in
You know, we didn't even talk about...
I went through a whole Rasputin thing.
Oh, all right. We didn't even really talk about the Cthulhu, the Boom stuff. Did you really like the Cthulhu?
Yeah, there's, I mean, it's an anthology. There's tons of stories, and there's one artist, I can't think of his name, but if anyone knows that series of books, he's the artist that has the extremely, as soon as you read the little, piece that he did. That he illustrated, and then you go to bed and you have those horrible nightmares. Mm-hmm. That's that artist. I can't think of his name, but
the killer cucumbers.
He did one. I mean, he has a way of drawing people's faces that, I mean, it looks like there's some kind of undertone evil or whatever. I'll shoot you an email on the guy's name.
Temple Smith, is it?
No, it's not Temple Smith.
Oh, okay.
I wonder if I can find it real quick now. But he has a lot of – he's kind of a reoccurring artist in that series of books. And but, yeah, I would highly recommend them. And I don't think they still make them. I think I've got four, and that's it.
That's all she wrote.
That was it.
These are actually a couple of these are really old. I had gotten these a long time ago, and we stopped recording episodes, so I didn't have a chance to read them.
Can I just answer for Chris?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, if he, yeah, if Chris or Tom, or Tom, either one, it, that's fine. This one comes from Raj. It says, hey guys, don't know if you remember me. I'm Raj, that guy in China who is attempting to catch up on all of your episodes. Well, I did just that in time for you to announce that the show was ending. Oh, fuck. That sucks, Raj. Sorry, buddy.
I thought he was going to say Raj, that guy from What's Happening.
I thought he was going to say Raj. No, it's Raj. It's like R-A-J. I think it's like, oh, it's gotcha. Like Raj from like the Big Boom Theory. I'm sure he doesn't like hearing that, but. Since then, the monthly format return has been welcome return to my ears. Yeah, that kind of went away too. Welcome back to Chicago, Mr. Tom.
Yeah.
You're supposed to come on.
I'm Tom.
Yeah.
Say
something funny.
Yeah, I'm eating hot dogs. Like my hot dogs, those Boston hot dogs.
Boston hot dog.
What? All right. Chowder in them.
Shut up. Your Tom versus the JLA / Aquaman podcast has got me into the DCU now with the launch of New 52 and my handy dandy iPad. I'm enjoying reading several titles on a monthly basis now. I'd be interested to know what he's still reading. For actual print, I get myself a trade of DMZ or Why the Last Man now every couple of months. There you go. A little why the Last Man? Why aren't you? I think the question is, why aren't you reading Why the Last Man, Braxton? You may be the last man to read. Why?
I don't know. That's probably on the short list of things to read.
It's pretty good. It's
well, the reason that's holding me back is just because I know that it's going to be nine?
It's three? A lot. Yeah, I don't even know. It's a ton of, but they're pretty like. They're quick reads. They're not. It moves pretty fast, and there's not a whole lot of exposition. I mean, it's going. It's good. I wasn't crazy about the ending, but it's a good tale up to that point anyway. You know what I mean? Like, there's
Another thing is I kind of know the ending.
Oh,
too.
Okay. Well, then, yeah. Then don't worry. Yeah,
but
no,
I still want to go through the ride.
The journey's good. It's a good journey. He goes on, I just want to say thanks again for getting me into comics beyond just the movies / cartoons, and I'm looking forward to new episodes where you discuss curling, drinking, baseball, and maybe the
Why does everybody pick on me about curling?
Because it's dumb.
I will send a broom up your ring. Peace.
What?
What? That's what we need. Sense. We need a threatening Chris Niesman, one that
angry,
just comes in,
drunken.
You know, with like a dagger in his teeth.
I don't think he was making fun of it. He just said he looks forward to where we discuss curling.
Well,
so
see, now my Chris Niesman is
you're going to have to talk about curling.
He's completely angry. You know, at the drop of a hat.
Well, you know, Chris has a lot of pent-up anger, I think. Most of it is from me constantly berating. Yeah, it's probably mostly, directed at me. And I would say justifiably so. I'm pretty cruel for the most part of, you know, to those closest to me. I'm, you know. Take care, Raj, or Raj, or I don't know, it's R-A-J, so I'm thinking it's Raj.
It's Raj.
Raja. Thanks, Raj. That's awesome. Yeah, I do remember you, actually, that you were the guy in China. You were like our one – we had like one listener. We have more now, but at the time we had like one guy in China, and I remember like going, who is this one guy in China that listens to us? And
I remember a comment being made that, you know, is it okay that he sends a message out to you guys or whatever? So.
Yeah, we weren't sure if you could get through. I mean, it is the red curtain, right? I mean, it's the – right, that's what they call it—the red curtain, or is it the red iron curtain, the red wall? I don't know. It's one of those.
That was Russian.
Some
kind of piece of fabric.
I'm not a historian. I'm not. Yeah. All right. This next one comes from Brett.
Favre.
Brett.
Oh my God! Tom does need to be here.
Why?
Brett Favre?
No, it's not Brett Favre. It's Brett V. Brett. I'm not going to say his last name. He says, hi guys, or no, he says, hey guys, I'm going to do this in a voice. Is that okay if I do a, sure. Like a, I'm going to try out, I'm going to try out a voice. A little fun. This might be a little
is
weird.
Is this going to be Cockney? Is this
No, you know, it's not British. It's just going to be a character like a, you know, they used to call them puppets in the radio biz. They would call it a puppet, you know, you'd do like you'd do your wacky voice. You'd go from, you know, you'd go from radio go, "Hey, we're, hey, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. Now we're going to do a little rock block here. We're doing a little Get the Lead Out with Led Zeppelin. What do you say? Hey, on the fives." And then you'd have like your puppet doing like sports or something, you know, and he would come in and he'd have like this funk, and you didn't know that it was the same guy. It was the DJ doing it. You know, you thought there was like this weird guy that did. So I'm going to do now. Here's we're going to, what should we name the puppet? The news puppet. I think we call him the male puppet.
Okay.
Well, no, I mean, that's,
he reads all of the email.
He's going to, the puppet is going to read all the email. We need it, but we need to name him something. I mean, his title is Male Puppet. Or maybe for a more, it's like Correspondence Puppet.
The Correspondence Puppet.
But should we call him Walter?
Like, I got to hear this guy. I don't even know if I'm going to approve of him.
Okay.
This guy may give me.
Don't freak
out.
I'm
scared he may give me douche chills.
Don't freak out now. This could be a little, this could be a little weird. Ready? Okay, here we go. wait. Well, then,
toy boat.
Well, toy. Hey guys, I recently picked up the giant size Kramer's Ergot 7 and it blew my mind. Have any of you read it, and can you comment on the unique format? I was really taken away by it. Really unique experience for the medium. Thanks, Brett. There you go. That was it?
Oh my god, you have to do. We have the corresponding puppet, correspondence puppet.
All right, I could do. Let me try that. Here's a different. See if you like this voice a little bit.
All right, let's try this other one. That one was a little too weird.
I recently picked up the giant size Kramer Ergo 7, and it blew my mind. Have any of you read it? And can you comment on the unique format? I was really taken away by it. Really unique experience for the medium. Thanks, Brett.
All right, who's the inspiration for that voice?
What are you talking about?
That voice came from a certain somebody.
Who?
It sounds like that may be a pro boxer. Is that not who is that?
Pro boxer.
Yeah.
Here, I'll give you a hint. It didn't sound that good. I usually do it better, but it's when Andy Dufresne left Shawshank Redemption, he crawled through a mile of shit. And came through clean on the other side.
That's pretty good. It's still too Sally, though.
It's too, like, it's still, too me?
Yeah, it's too you.
All right. I was just kidding about the whole puppet.
That first one, though, I mean, it was a departure.
It was really, wasn't it?
I thought that maybe you brought someone else in and did a little old Chris Angel mind freak on
it. I know. Yeah, maybe I was just fucking with you a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it would be kind of cool if we had sort of let's do one more and we'll see if we can through the magic of podcasting. To you it's just going to sound like me talking,
yeah,
but to the audience it's going to sound different.
Okay.
So you're just going to hear me and then the audience is going to hear something completely different. So I'm just going to read it. Okay, anyway, here we go. Ready? Here's Walter the correspondence puppet.
I recently picked up the giant-sized Kramer's Ergot 7, and it blew my mind. Have any of you read it, and can you comment on the unique format? I was really taken away by it. Really unique experience for the medium. Thanks, Brett.
That is really... I think maybe I'm going to have nightmares tonight.
I think we might have nailed it. I think that might be...
That might be the reoccurring correspondence puppet.
Reoccurring. Walter. I think we call him Walter in honor of Walter Donut, the donut guy. Walter Winchell. Was he the donut guy?
Did he die?
I have no idea.
Don't you have an Andy Griffith voice? To pay kind of homage
I always like.
Don't tell me you don't do voices after we just went through that.
No. Sorry.
You know, I used to
no
do
Andy
it
Griffith.
Great, and this is...
I used to do Pee Wee Herman pretty well. That's about it.
I used to do a really good Cockney accent, but everybody has their own Cockney, or really their own British accent, just like everyone has their own Southern accent. And the funny thing about it is those two accents that usually everyone has are so insulting to the people.
Well, yeah, they don't sound anything.
Duh, no. Yeah. But I actually...
I mean, I've literally insulted a Brit, you know, and been told it was the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, my neighbor, who's, you know, a really, you know, like my best friend over here, is from Northern Ireland, and he walked me through all of the Manchester accent, the Liverpool, East End gangster, which, you know, you see a great deal of in movies, the London accent, and he can do them all pretty good.
I have my barber is from England. He's British, and I just go and make him talk to me about stuff because he has sort of a Londoner, you know, kind of the bit more of the street accent.
Well, we've got a Londoner who is our butcher at the local grocery store, and it's, you know, you go in to get a couple fillets or whatever, and you feel like you're in, you know, you're in London or something. The way he's talking to you about meat and stuff. You tip your hat to him when you leave.
Right? His 2 pence. I'm not sure. 6 pence for your trouble.
It's
really
the
same
catchy.
Thing goes, like you said, like a Southern accent. And then, like, I always get annoyed by the Chicago accent. You know what I mean?
I don't even know what that sounds
well,
like.
Well, there is no real, I mean, there. It's not even a Chicago accent. What guys relate to the Chicago accent is the, like, what they used to do on, like, Saturday Night Live for Da Bears, kind of. That,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's more of, like, actually, like, a suburban, like, Cicero accent kind of thing. It's
well,
not even...
Dry your eyes, man. Look at the horrible sign we got as Southerners. I mean, all you have to do is sound like a complete idiot. And what sucks is it's not too far from the truth. I mean, we abbreviate everything we can in our vernacular.
I think it's charming. I don't find it. No, it's you sound like idiots. You do. I can't.
We do.
You don't though. Your accent isn't terrible. I mean, it's not yours. Isn't.
The thing of it is you know we record late and. It doesn't matter where you're from, but your accent is going to get thicker the later and the tireder you get. So, I'm basically sipping moonshine by the time we get off of this thing with like overalls on.
Well, we should answer Brett's question since we asked it like 4 times. Have you read Kramer's Ergot 7?
No, I have not.
I haven't either. That's a very indie book. I have not picked up any of the Kramer's Ergot. I'm sure I'm going to insult Brett and at least 11 other people that read Kramer's Ergot. But it seems like a very it's a fantagraphics kind of.
Oh, that's you just sound insulting.
I know. I'm kind of doing it on purpose.
What are you going to say? Finish your.
I'm all for everybody making whatever comics they want to make. You want to create something that's fantastic, but I also don't necessarily feel that, you know, there are levels of good to me, and there are sometimes.
Sounds
things...
like you're about. Let me just finish your thought for
you. Go ahead.
I don't feel like it should exist so much.
No, that's pretty much what I. No, I know.
I'm pulling up some pictures of it, and it's a big book.
It's a big book. You can say that. It's a giant book. I don't know. I mean, I just think it's not my thing.
I would be scared I'd damage it.
It's too big for you to.
Yeah, that's something I couldn't. Where am I going to put it? You know,
I got some big books, man. I had to build a shelf for some of my books because I got all those fucking IDW artist editions that we were talking about.
Yeah,
like I got those, and I have that giant DC Comics book.
Those things.
That giant, like, you know, it's the history of DC Comics.
Yeah, those big
it's
Cadillacs.
Yeah. So I got a lot of big, I got some big books, man. I got some tonnage when it comes to books. I thought I had another email here. Hold on just a second.
Do you think we're going to get some more emails?
Well,
you
get
any feedback on me being on the show? Is there people like,
no,
you know, pulling your sleeve up to book us out?
Nobody
what
is.
Doing? No, what are you doing,
nobody,
Sal?
Nobody talks to me about anything. Nobody says anything to me about.
We're in some corners, man. I know I'm in a corner.
What are you talking? What do you mean? What does that mean?
Well, I mean, I don't talk to anybody about.
Oh yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't really. I mean, nobody said anything to me at this point about, like, one way or the other. The only feedback we've gotten has been on the. Forum,
well, we should point out that our forum since our last episode.
It's like quadrupled in size.
Let me tell you, it's quadrupled in size.
Did I step on your. I didn't mean to step on your, your
just,
lead there.
I'm just helping you put that point in. And I mixed it up a little bit on there with some folks today.
Got in there a little dirty.
Bit. Good. Hanging around.
Yeah, we had some.
It's a water cooler.
Yeah, we had some people talking some comics and stuff on there, and yeah, it was cool.
Actually, Moni Bolas.
You seemed a little familiar with Moni Bolas.
She is from Guadalajara.
It's easy for you to say.
Guadalajara.
There you go.
Mexico, and she has a. She's into the same PI fiction that I'm into.
Oh, all right.
And she's got a webcomic that she's been working on for quite a while. Detective Fausto.
Fausto.
And I would urge everyone to go and check it out. Just check her out. Look at her comics. It's pretty good.
Check her out. Check out her comics. Cool. If people want to, get a hold of us, you can email us at info@aroundcomics. You can get us on Twitter at Around Comics or at Brian Salazar, or that's Brian with an O, or at Braxton, Braxton, 9.
Yep.
You can visit our website, aroundcomics.com, and we have a forum there. We have comments on every episode. You can leave comments. You can go to the forum and discuss all sorts of whatever you want to discuss with us. You can tell us what kind of blabbering freaking idiots we are on this show, because that's what we do, but, you know. All right. I think I've had about enough of you. I think you're getting too comfortable on the show, and I'm afraid this
taking
might
liberties.
This might be your last episode.
This chair's really comfortable.
You just don't know your place, mister. You just don't know where to draw the line. No. Once again, thank you all for listening. Thank you for joining me, Braxton. It's always fun.
Always.
This episode is sponsored by DCBS, Discount Comic Book Service, at dcbservice.com. You get your comics there because they're cheap and good and clean, I think.
Good for you.
Good for you. Tasty. And yeah, it comes down to what that, why not? You know,
yeah.
Just
you
do it.
A,
just, there's no reason
you
not
you
to.
Don't have one reason.
Yeah. Help me out. Do something for me. What the hell?
Yep. I mean, you've been recording and putting out these episodes. You could buy one freaking book on DCBS.
Yeah, yeah.
Buy a book.
Just go buy something, you cheap bastard. Get over there and... Oh, man. Was that over the line? Was that...
No.
That was good sales.
It was warranted.
All right. As always, you can reach us at aroundcomics.com. And once again, thank you. Sincerely, thanks to everybody that listens. And feel free to give us your feedback. Come and tell us whatever you feel about it, good or bad. We're certainly going to listen to what you have to say. Might not always agree with it. And rarely will we ever heed your advice. But we will listen nonetheless. And that's it. So, thanks. Anything
good night,
do you have anything to add? Is that Should I bring Walter back real quick? For
no. I would like to add, don't bring Walter back.
Whoa. That's...
Until next episode.
Why you gotta be... Oh, all right. There you go. All right. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.